So, should we just keep going?
Yeah.
Okay, we just started, yeah. But, okay, so you saw it, and you saw the poster for this was one of the early extreme affordabilities?
Yeah, because I was always interested in doing design for developing communities since I came from India. I've seen poverty firsthand.
Right.
And I was interested in how do you use designing
to
overcome that.
Right.
So, though I didn't get to do the course in my first or second year, but in my third year I said, you know, let me go for it.
Yeah.
So that's when I signed up for ME206. And after that, I mean, the first quarter was more, you know, like a lot of process stuff and made a short project and so on. But later on, so we had a choice of selecting whether we go for which of the three studios, Myanmar, Nepal, or Mexico. And Mexico was about, you know, some kind of a medical device. It was a collaboration with a hospital, I think. So I wasn't too keen on that.
Okay. How come?
I have not experienced Mexico. I mean,
Neither
have I Myanmar. But I feel it's much closer to what India is.
Okay.
And I had this, you know, this experience or this desire to do something.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Mexico was very different. just my perception.
Yeah.
It did not be, actually. And Nepal is also pretty close, but Nepal had a very fixed stream. They wanted to do an incubator, and that's it.
Okay.
And I did not want that kind of rigidity. So I opted for Myanmar.
Okay.
Also, I mean, earlier in the quarter, Debbie had come and given a talk, Debbie Taylor.
Okay.
And I was quite, you know, taken by that. So that was my choice of going into Myanmar. And within Myanmar studio, we first got a list of, you know, possible projects that we could do. And actually, my first choice was not the pump project. It was one more project, which was the BOP design lab.
Okay.
And what it was to create a facility or, you know, or a group or an infrastructure to enable design to be done in Myanmar as well as here. So kind of a collaborative infrastructure. And coming from a process point of view, since I'm doing a PhD, that seemed very, you know, interesting and exciting. And so I jumped onto it, and so did a few others. But they were not enough to form a core group or a project team.
Okay.
So we let go of that, and I decided to continue that on the side. And then the next project which caught my eye was the pump project. Basically because it was an engineering project. And I felt its impact would be greater than, you know, designing a water basket and things like that. From a fun point of view.
So I guess how did, is there a point where you felt like you really, like, since it is an engineering project, was there a point where you started to feel like, okay, now we're really, we're done ramping up, now we're really into it, in terms of the development of your work?
I mean, in the project, there was a point of time where we were, you know, kind of in the limbo. You know? We had done need finding and user tests and, you know, whatever, observations of users.
Dana
had been to Myanmar for a week and had come back with lots of photographs and stories.
That was over spring break?
Over spring break, yes. And after that, we were kind of seeing what's our point of view and where we are going. And there was this constant tension that, okay, you know, we started this with saying that we want to build a deep leaf pump. And then we, in the user observations, we stepped back quite a bit and asked about what is it that these people want and so on. So there was this always this constant tension about whether this is an engineering project or a design project. Whether we go ahead and use engineering methods and design the best pump that there is, or whether you actually, you know, actually step back and design a device which need not be a pump. And we had quite a lot of discussion in the team. I think that was a point where we took the decision of, you know, going with the pump.
Yeah.
So and saying that the design aspect would come more in the interface.
Okay.
But we would go for the mechanism.
Right. Okay.
So you decided to do a mechanical an engineering project in
yes.
terms of your division there.
Yes. We did use a lot of design methodology and not so much calculations. Like we did a lot of prototyping.
Yeah.
But the emphasis was on the mechanism.
Mm-hmm. So you're prototyping the mechanisms,
yes.
basically. That.
Yeah.
So it's a way of using the design process, prototyping, etc., in order to achieve engineering goals.
Yeah. Yes.
So you felt like you weren't inventing a new solution, but you were using design in order to engineer better an old solution. Is that correct?
We actually started from first principles, so we didn't take an existing solution. We did look at the current pump designs mm-hmm. or the mechanisms. Whenever I say design, it's currently mechanism. But we said, like, okay, let's just start from first principles and see how do we make water go up. Mm-hmm. So we, you know, just started with about 2 feet.
Mm-hmm.
Then we went outside to Myers Bridge, and then we did 20 feet. Then we went to Turman and went to 60 feet. So the emphasis mm-hmm. was on always height and getting water up.
It was always on that, or wasn't, I'm sorry.
It was always
on height and getting water up, and that's really what you were interested in doing.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And we said, like, getting water up cheaply and efficiently.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the mistakes, I think, which we did was we did not look so much at existing pumps. And mm-hmm. I think it would have been good to do that because there are current pumps, and I talked with Vic Scheinman in 310. So I got a lot of engineering inputs. Mm-hmm. They have a lot of pumps which are like 700 feet deep. They are the windmill pumps they use.
Wow.
They are very expensive, like, you know, mm-hmm. $500-$600. Mm-hmm. While our target was $50. So in a way, it was good to start from first principles instead of using existing things. But it would have been good to take some of the ideas from there as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And ultimately, that's what we did end up doing when Dana went to Myanmar.
Mm-hmm.
And when I had been there earlier, we borrowed a lot of ideas from their existing line of pumps mm-hmm. in IDE.
Right.
As well as from the Aprotech pump design. Mm-hmm. Or the Kickstart currently. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, we saw the linkage.
Some of the reasons why you borrowed from Aprotech and from IDE?
Yeah, the first reason was that when we did the design at Stanford,
mm-hmm.
it was more or less, you know, in a vacuum. And there was not, according to me, there was not enough collaboration between us and IDE.
Mm-hmm.
We did get the initial inputs, but thereafter it was just one email for 2 weeks. And you know, even if we did check up a few things, there was not much of a back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
It was just us asking a few questions and they replying. But mm-hmm. That's not exactly how design collaboration is.
Mm-hmm.
So we designed something which worked here in Terman
mm-hmm.
up to the fifth floor.
Yeah.
And that was where the course ended.
Mm-hmm.
But then after, when I went to Myanmar in July, I saw that, you know, what we had was too expensive and too difficult to manufacture in Myanmar conditions. So then they already had an existing design of washers and plungers. So what we did was we just shrunk the size. They had 4 inches while we wanted 1.5 inches.
Mm-hmm.
So we just shrunk it and it worked fine.
Mm-hmm.
And it was much more simple and
yeah.
robust.
Okay.
So you shrunk the existing parts that they had?
Yeah.
Their design basically shrunk you.
Yeah.
You took what you wanted from it and shrunk it down.
Yes.
What were the parts? We're fairly familiar with
okay.
with the different parts of it because we did a whole thing. But can you tell us
sure.
what you...
Do you want me to... I have a presentation and photos. Do you want me to,
would
to
love
pull
to
it up?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because I think we saw some of the, like, there was a certain point where in the photos it's like, oh yeah, that's the IDE pump, or you know, that kind of dual head thing that you had done your adaptation to.
We might need to do a follow up.
Mm-hmm. With Dana or with Harris? Yeah.
One more trip, okay. So during the last, the end of my trip, I had made this presentation to the IDE staff.
Mm-hmm.
So I went over through the whole thing. And the changes you want to discuss that. Where did I put it now? Design, okay, deep lift design report. Is it visible?
Yeah.
Okay. You can come here if you want.
One more is here. Thank you. So this was your report?
Yes.
We don't have a copy of this, do we?
Mm-hmm.
Can I get this from you?
Sure. So, I don't know why this is so slow. Okay, start. So this was the Stanford part, about need finding, point of view, then benchmarking, then timeline. Then we tried with different technologies, then 220, 60 feet, and the four changes that we did. Video. Just okay. So this was the IDE workshop.
The four changes. Let's back up just for a second so we know. Just tell us what the four changes are.
Yeah, the four innovations, as we call it. Let me draw actually for the current, you know, how the current design works.
It's okay. You could.
Okay.
Just. Speak them out.
Okay, so what happens is that, you know, in a common deep lift well, which they sell for something like $700 or something, you have the tube well, okay? And in the tube well, you have one more pipe, which is the riser pipe.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right, yeah.
And at the bottom of the riser pipe, you have this brass cylinder attachment, which consists of the brass piston, brass cylinder and the brass piston. So all of this is brass. And then you attach a piston pipe to the brass plunger. So you actually have three concentric pipes. You have the tube well,
right.
The riser pipe, and you have the piston
pipe.
So what we did was we did not use the brass thing,
the
brass plunger, because it's too expensive.
Okay.
So we went away from that. We said like we would also remove the riser pipe. And we would just use the tube well itself as the cylinder.
Right.
And then all we needed to have was one more piston.
Okay.
Pipe. And then a plunger washer design.
Right.
So what it entailed is that the installation of foot valve becomes difficult. Because then the foot valve has to be installed on the tube well.
Right.
Now there is no brass cylinder to put it on.
Yeah.
So how do you install foot valves on existing tube wells or new tube wells? And how do you take it out and replace it when it's about 60 feet deep?
Okay.
Is the design challenge.
Right.
So what we came up with was, in Stanford, was just a heavy foot valve which just dropped onto a couple of notches inbuilt in the tube well. So that was the design at Stanford. So that was the first one. And the second one was the removal of riser pipe. The third one, we said, is simpler piston design, though on retrospectively it's not simple. And the possible use of treadle action, because the current $700 pumps are all hand pumps.
Okay.
They're not treadle pumps.
Okay. Oh, interesting.
Wow. Okay.
So these are the four things. And this was the rough prototyping, and this was the piston design. Okay, so at IDE workshop, we went through the following changes. So we modified the plunger design from this to this.
Okay.
In Stanford, we had started with what Dana found in PRL in terms of materials, which was mostly aluminum stock and so on. And that was too expensive to get in Myanmar or Yangon. Well, this was the existing design of their 4-inch washers, so we just shrunk it up.
Okay.
And it worked well. then we modified the foot valve. So we had this brass cylinder,
mm-hmm.
which acted as the weight.
Mm-hmm.
And at the bottom, there was this valve. So you just drop it into the pipe.
Mm-hmm.
From brass, we went to cast iron mm-hmm. in Yangon.
Okay.
And then we actually made a radical change. We actually said, we don't want a brass cylinder. We would just use force.
Mm-hmm.
And what we'd have is, in the tube well, we would have a circular disc with a hole mm-hmm. in the center. And then you have this spring steel valve, which you fix to the plunger,
mm-hmm.
and you just ram it inside.
Right.
Because it's spring steel, so it locks in place.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can remove the, detach the plunger from it by using a rotating motion.
Right, okay.
And this was much, much simpler, you know. Mm-hmm. It's very easy to make spring steel valves. So that was a big change.
It seems like there's considerably less material.
Oh, yes. Yeah, mm-hmm. definitely. Like, this one takes 2 days to make in Yangon.
Okay.
So, you know, it's
and how long
good from manufacturing.
And the spring steel took how many days?
It can be done in 15 minutes. I mean, just the spring steel part. The rest of the disc can be, you know, I think they are done on a lathe machine, but they can be done in a large batch. So you get the discs.
We're talking about a reduction of 2 days for a part down to a couple of hours. For
yeah,
a part.
Couple of hours. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So that was one thing, and yeah, and we hadn't thought about developing the, or we had not decided to develop the treadle mechanism in Stanford because mm-hmm. of time limitations.
Right.
So we started that when we went to Yangon. So we started with one cylinder, then we went to a two-cylinder design. And then finally, I think it's we have come back to one cylinder.
Okay.
But it's the Aprotec type of design.
Okay, yeah.
So this was the proposed design back then.
Mm-hmm.
But then we have changed it a lot, so...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Should I go forward or...
Yep.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So I think this was how it, you know, this was one of the tests that we did. I think it's a video. Let me check. Is it not? Yeah, maybe it's not. Actually, it is. Yeah, I'll open it. Yeah.
You have... folders with the original images and all that.
Yes.
I'd love to get that from you if I may.
Okay. Certainly. Yeah. Oh, no, it came twice. So this was one of the... We built this platform actually.
Oh, really? Okay.
In order to test it.
Right, yeah, okay. Then.
So we built a wooden platform. And this is the design team we had at Yangon in the workshop. So we had two engineers and three welders. And then we actually also did some more brainstorming on what different mechanisms can we have
mm-hmm.
instead of the treadle. So one of the limitations we faced was about the flow rate. Because
mm-hmm.
The flow rate was pretty low. Their current suction pumps give a flow rate at about 10 feet depth
mm-hmm.
of about 1,200 gallons an hour. And this is a UK gallon, it's not US gallon.
10 feet depth?
Yes.
And?
1,200 gallons.
1,200 an hour.
UK gallons.
Okay. Is a UK gallon bigger or smaller?
It's bigger.
Okay.
Yeah. I think US gallon is 3.7 liters, while UK is about 4 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, while... The flow rate we got was about 200 to 300.
Right, right.
And at a depth of 35 feet.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So we said, okay, how do we increase flow rate? And that's where we came back to this two-cylinder design, because we thought it would. And we thought of increasing the tube belt to a 4-inch diameter. Mm-hmm. So we get, you know, more flow rate.
Right.
But later on during the testing, we found that is in 4-inch... You can actually get more flow rate,
mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. but that design is not efficient because you cannot utilize it. Because once you have a 4-inch well, the limitation becomes human power. Human being cannot lift that much water up. It's just useless.
50 feet by 4 inches is pretty heavy.
It's a lot of water.
And you can't do it with treadles.
We would, I mean, it's not physically feasible to get 1,200 gallons at 50 feet.
Okay.
With human power. It's just
with that kind of, okay.
So, physical limitations, I think what Dana has got currently is about at 35 feet, about 400 gallons. At 50 feet, it would still drop further.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and that's just because there's just a certain amount of leakage that's going to happen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And even if we had the design which could give you more, one person will not be able to lift that much.
Okay.
So your limitation, your ceiling is how much a person can lift.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So the question becomes, how do you design a pump to maximize a person's input?
Mm-hmm. And in terms of, when we say like how much a person can lift, it's about how, in this case, how much force they can apply to the treadle.
Yes.
So like if you weigh 150 pounds, you just can't. If you weighed 400 pounds, you might be able to get more. Okay.
Yeah.
There's also a gearing thing. You could, if you gear, just say you had a gear ratio, you could do something, but then you got to start going really fast.
Yes, that's right.
And you're still right up against the limitation, and that's what you found. So do you have a rough number about what a person can lift, maxes out with the current?
Yeah, we did some calculations, and Dana has done some more, but I'll show you some of mine. So let me see. The Excel thing. Pump calculations. Wrong one.
And did you do the calculations after you realized, so you kind of did it and then realized, oh, they can't lift this much weight, and then you decide to calculate it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So we were not very good engineers.
You're good designers, though. That's
great designers.
Yeah, I was like, that's totally how good.
Yeah. So we did these calculations about. We said, okay, we considered how much power a person would put in for one of their current suction pumps.
Okay.
And then how much water that person could lift for that much power for the current for the deep lift design.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So. Considering 1,200 gallons at 50 at 10 feet, the power input becomes about 50 watts. And then for 50 watts, we calculated the different, at different heights, what could be the maximum flow rate. Or suppose if we wanted a given flow rate, how do we change the lift or the suction head?
Right.
And so we did some more calculations on that as well.
How long do they usually run these things?
I think they can treadle nonstop for maximum of an hour or so.
About an hour,
yes. And then they have to change the person or take rest for some time.
Mm-hmm.
Take a break. And one of the things is that their step height is about 8 to 9 feet. This is generally, the comfortable.
Inches?
Oh, inches, sorry. It's a comfortable height.
That would really change the
flow rate. Yeah, I wish we could do that.
Yeah.
You're very tall, skinny people.
Yeah. I think that's one of the reasons why, this Myanmar photographs. The kickstart pumps have a higher flow rate because we speculate that those pumps are operated by, very well-built Africans.
Interesting.
Huh. While the Myanmar people don't get that much nourishment. And they are very slightly built.
Mm-hmm.
So the input they give is much different.
Yeah, interesting.
So then you have to think about, in terms of design, about, the person's diet. And
right.
The weight. And
yeah.
These are actual people.
Yes, yes. Because the input is not a motor, it's a person.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, let me ask you about what you... Did you do work in the PRL?
Dana did a lot of work. I think I helped him a bit sometimes, but not so much.
Just because we're seeing how we weave the PRL into, you know, in terms of what.
Yeah.
And it seems like not that much that was done at the PRL.
Yeah, but most of the critical parts were made at PRL for the Stanford design, like the valves and the plunger. Dana had this all machined in the PRL because he had greater access.
Right. Mm-hmm. 24/7, yeah.
Yes, and free. We didn't have to pay for it. So he made the parts, and then we assembled them in Termon on the site, and we tested them in the stairwell.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk a little about what your role was and what the group dynamic was? Who did what, basically? If there was a who did what?
Yeah, there wasn't an assigned roles, but some roles did emerge. So Dana was very keen on, you know, he's very good at manufacturing and making stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So he did that role very well. He's also very focused, so, you know. He tends to bring us together and go forward. I am more of a divergent and a laid back person.
Mm-hmm.
So it was my role to, you know, stop and step back and reflect.
Mm-hmm.
And we had this initial tension between us, which we did resolve somewhere halfway in the project. Because I always used to tend to pull back and he used to push forward. You know,
right.
How do we resolve that? So then we came to an agreement of how do we do that, and that worked very well.
Yeah. How did you do it?
Yeah, I mean, we just spoke about it. There was no, you know, like a technique.
Mm-hmm.
But we became aware of what we were doing.
Okay.
More.
Yeah.
And okay. We had this diagram, this kind of force diagram which we did, where we said, okay, it's as if, you know, we are pulling in different directions, but we should pull like this so the whole project goes forward.
Okay. So you're pulling up.
Up, yes.
Basically, instead of out.
Yeah, instead of opposing each other.
Mm-hmm.
We do our individual things.
Right.
But we do it so that the project moves forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Instead of being in a deadlock.
Yeah.
And what about the other two guys?
Other two, yeah. So,
what were their names?
Pete?
Yeah.
P-E-E-T. Pete mm-hmm. Lau and Ling. Yuan Jun Ling. So, Pete was actually very good in terms of, you know, managing the team dynamics.
Because
mm-hmm. he was the one who used to bring us together and see how we are doing as a team.
Mm-hmm.
And get these things going. So, our discussion about what we were doing wrong was started by him.
Mm-hmm.
Was so he an engineer also?
No, management, MBA.
Okay.
Student. So, he did that role very well about, you know, putting the group together and supporting us.
Yeah.
He also had this bit of apprehension that he was not an engineer, so mm-hmm. he didn't know how much he could contribute.
Mm-hmm.
But he helped us a lot in terms of prototyping and testing. Mm-hmm. So,
how so?
In terms of setting up stuff and, you know, trying out things.
Okay.
This is basically, you know, simple stuff.
Yeah.
Not engineering as such. And then Ling was very good in terms of the hands-on stuff. As well. Mm-hmm.
Was he an engineer also?
Yeah, he was an engineer too.
Another master's student?
Master's student.
Yes. Mackie?
Yeah.
And what was his role, so to speak, that emerged?
His role was similar to Dana's, I think, more on the prototyping side. So he led in that aspect of prototyping stuff and doing it fast and doing it rapidly.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm. I see. So, just to kind of like get a general picture, and we know this isn't exactly true.
Yeah.
You did a lot of reflection about what was going on. You're an engineer, but it was like, let's step back and see really what this is about.
Yeah.
What are we doing? Dana was really getting in the shop and doing a lot of the machining of the parts. Ling was doing a lot of rough, rapid prototyping.
Yes.
Prior to actually making the more polished parts.
Yeah.
Pete basically was really good at managing the group. Like, here's what meetings are, this is what we're doing, this is where we're at. Okay.
That was it. And I think one more role, I mean, we all did all the things, but these were the things which we tended to do more often.
Yeah.
So even Pete helped in prototyping, things like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Also, one more thing which I, during the course of project, I felt a lot of, you know, disconnected from IDE Myanmar, and I wasn't happy about it. Because I felt that I had it actually, since I had not gone to Myanmar, Pitena, I felt a lot of disconnect with the people, or, you know, whom are we designing for, and who are the users. And I wasn't happy with the kind, with the communications, or the lack of it with IDE. So I had also taken the role of being the contact with IDE, so sending out emails, you know, and trying to talk to them and things like that.
Can you it seems one of the themes that comes up in how you're talking is there's this very interesting kind of marriage of design and engineering that's happening here. You're basically doing an engineering product, project, but you're approaching it as designers.
Yes.
That keeps coming up. You said we weren't such great engineers, but you're doing engineering, and that's really what you're doing. And when you're talking about working with IDE, you're really talking about a kind of user-centered design and how that's a huge interest of yours to get a really good solution. So, to me, it's fascinating because it's engineering, but you're using all this design methodology to do it. And then when you get in a pinch and you really need to figure out this specific thing, you're back to doing calculations, that kind of quantitative engineering. Can you talk more about how that happened? And, I mean, how that played out?
Yeah. I think one of the main reasons was that this project was in the D-School. So it was in the context of design. We were all surrounded by that context everywhere, you know, in the workspace, in the theater. The course was designed for doing design, not for doing engineering. Also, the coaches we had were more design oriented. We did not have anyone like Vic Shine. So
who were your coaches?
David Klaus. So he was the main coach for us.
Okay.
Because he had done a similar PUM project in the past year.
Okay.
So he helped us a lot with the valve design and getting us started, actually. So that was very, very key. So I was thinking, like, if this project would have been in 3.10, it would have definitely taken a much more engineering flavor. So the environment played its part. And also, I think the where we went more towards design was, you know, to answer the question why. Why we are doing this? Because I think engineering doesn't answer the question that much about, you know, why make this product, you know, why is it like this? It answers the question, how do we do this, you know, how do we optimize, how do we make it efficient? So it was also asking both questions, why as well as how.
And why were you doing it? What's the answer to why?
The project or asking the questions?
Well, what was the answer to why are we doing this?
Yeah,
I mean, because the engineering answers are really clear in terms of what you did and what you found. But the other question is so interesting, and that's a real design question.
Yeah, and for me, the answer did not come till I went to Myanmar. So even after I'd done all this project, right, only when I'd gone to the villages to see the people, can I understand why. And the thing is, you know, we see that they have easy access, or, you know, potential access to water where they can actually change their livelihoods. They don't have the mechanism to use it, to use the water. And they are living in a very, you know, impoverished state because of that, because they don't have anything to use the water with, which they can afford. There are pumps in Myanmar, or deep lift pumps, which can go 100 feet, 200 feet. But they are all diesel-driven pumps. Diesel is very expensive.
It's a whole infrastructure too. You gotta have
So
fuel, repair. It's gigantic.
So I mean, this fact was known to us even, you know, in spring. But that feeling of, you know, it is really so did not come till I was in that space in the village itself, seeing for myself, you know, how these people live or how do they access water. So it had to meet for me to be, I mean, you know, to really understand, it had to be a felt emotion rather than a rational thought.
And how did that how did it change the house? Or and two questions: how did it change? How did that why, which is really profound, that it had to be absolutely visceral to you?
Yes.
And a personal experience.
Yeah.
For that kind of empathy, I guess.
Yeah.
How did it change the house that you made? And do you feel it would have changed them if you had that experience before? Would have changed
yes.
engineering?
So the way it changed was that, you know, it made me insist on a much more robust design. Because we had something that worked, but when I saw the condition in which it was supposed to work, it was very different. And this just wasn't enough, the kind of designing or even engineering we had done. It mm-hmm. had to be much more robust and detailed than that. Because the conditions are very variable there. Even as I found out, the same, if you ask, go to different shops all over Myanmar and ask for 2-inch PVC pipes,
mm-hmm.
they come in different inner diameters.
Mm.
So even that condition can, you know, totally destroy the whole of installation process.
Right,
because
right.
the washer won't fit, the plunger won't fit, or it will be too loose or too tight. And
mm-hmm.
you have to design around that. And also about, you know, making this pump last for a long time. Because when you see the condition of the people, you really want to give them a good product.
So I had
also,
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
Yeah, so coming to the second question, like, it would have helped us much more, or for me to have that feeling to, you know, not push for something that works, but something that is more well-engineered. I mean, at the end of the course, we had something that works,
mm-hmm.
but that wasn't good enough.
How did you solve the of the first part when you were there? You said you go to stores, the PVC inner diameter is different. How did you solve that?
I didn't solve that, actually. I left immediately after that, you know, because...
you're like, forget it.
Yeah. So the field trip to Mandalay was just a week before I left in Myanmar.
Mm-hmm.
So it was during that field trip that we faced all these, you know, dimension control issues. And after that, I made a note of it and told to Dana and others and their own engineers.
Mm-hmm.
So the way we had planned to solve it was to have, you know, to ship the parts with the pump, not buy the whole of pipe in the from the local dealers.
Mm-hmm.
But the main dimensions especially have to be shipped with the pump itself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Was that the, when you left, was that where you and Dana overlapped for like a half hour before he flew out, or was that a different
yes.
trip?
Yes, yeah, okay. That was, so I came back on...
That was in the summer.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I came back on 24th August in the morning, and he was going to fly the next morning,
okay.
25th morning.
Okay.
So we just met for about an hour on 24th evening. I updated him of what I had done,
mm-hmm.
and then he went forward with it.
Okay.
In terms of making a more robust design, how did you solve that?
I'm not sure if the design is currently robust or, you know, if they have done enough testing. So, one of the ways, I mean, so the whole thing was that, you know, when I went there, I did not want to lead the design.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted their engineers to lead the design.
Because
I wanted it to be their design and not my design, you know. With me just giving instructions of, okay, do this, do that.
Why?
Because I felt from the start that it has to be their project and not my project. I'm more of a consultant. I'm a student here. I'm not going to work full-time on this project and see it to completion. It's their engineers who are going to do it, so they better, you know, own the project and feel a sense of ownership for it.
Mm-hmm.
So we did discuss with them, and one of the things for making it more robust was to come up with, you know, a better valve design.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the valve design in terms of concept is good, but it's not engineered in terms of its dimensions. So, for example, the disc was too big, and it was obstructing the flow of water. So if you really would have to look at fluid dynamics, you know, you can actually make the diameter much smaller,
mm-hmm.
and then see how small it can be without wearing the washer too much.
Mm-hmm.
So what we had to do was a lot of experiments, you know, change the dimensions and run the test through different dimensions,
mm-hmm.
and see what the effect is. And only through this test we could find out what's the optimum thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because even if we calculate, it's not enough to do that in real conditions.
Mm-hmm.
Because in calculations, you always use assumptions. And many times these fail. If the water is muddy, if the water mm-hmm. is brackish, if it's hard, if it has more salt, there are just too many variables.
Sounds like part of what you were doing, part of what your concern was that engineering is a very idealized
yes.
version.
Yeah.
And doing the engineering at Stanford was, even though it was rough prototyping, it was still very idealized, as opposed to when you got there and you said, wow, everything's different here. How do we apply our engineering knowledge to
yeah.
these very, very specific situations?
Yeah. Also, one of the things, one of the, you know, the underlying goals behind our project in Stanford was to understand what's going on, because we had not worked in the pump field at all.
Mm-hmm.
All four of us were new, and we really wanted to get mm-hmm. this hands-on experience of how do we lift water. And that also drove our methodology in terms of making it more hands-on. Just go out and try to pump water and see how do you lift it. So we did most of the initial understanding part in terms of water in Stanford. But we were not aware of the conditions
mm-hmm.
which the pump would be used in
mm-hmm.
until we went to Myanmar.
It's very interesting. You weren't really interested in benchmarking per se. You were interested in the fundamental problem of lifting water.
Yes.
And then you looked at solutions.
Yeah.
After that.
Yeah.
After you had real hands-on experience with
yeah.
it.
So,
and that
I mean,
seems
yeah.
to be another theme that you're concerned with, is hands-on.
Yeah.
Absolutely direct hands-on experience with the water, with people in Myanmar, with the ground, what's
yes,
going on there.
That's right.
Who's doing it, where the sourcing is.
Yeah. It's good to have some abstraction as well. But
mm-hmm.
if you have to make a product that works,
mm-hmm.
you need hands-on.
So as the reflector, in
yeah.
some ways, you did a lot of reflection in the group. I mean, you did other things too, but you felt like that was, you just stepped back and looked. Was that a question of doing abstracting about what you were doing? Was it a question of really kind of assess, we're not doing hands-on? Do you see what I mean? It seems
yeah.
like if you're reflecting, you're just abstracting as opposed to having that experience. Can you talk a little, can you straighten all that out?
Yeah. I mean, one of the key things, as I've mentioned, was, you know, this tension between whether it's an engineering project or design project, what method to use and how much. So that was an issue which I brought up in the reflection, because I just did not, feel comfortable about, this project seems to be an engineering project. It's defined and worded as an engineering project, but we're using design methods. How come, and how do we resolve that?
Mm-hmm.
So that was something that came in reflection.
Mm-hmm.
And the second thing was, which technology do we choose? How fast do we move? So I was actually pretty very keen on preserving ambiguity,
mm-hmm.
while Dana was keen on resolving it fast.
Mm-hmm.
But then we had to do both together, because otherwise, for a week or so, we were totally in the limbo, where we haven't decided, and hence we could not act. We were still kind of figuring out, okay, what are we doing? Why are we doing this? What do we do next?
Mm-hmm.
So it was also about decision making, about how fast we make decisions,
mm-hmm.
and how do we go forward. So we didn't push the hands-on thing, in the reflection so much. It just happened quite naturally. Just we had this course assignment called as the Wingding,
mm-hmm.
where it was more or less a very an introduction to prototyping.
Mm-hmm.
So one Wednesday evening, we spent about a couple of hours for each project, just all of us getting together in the space and prototyping something.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the intent was to get the students to start on, you know, doing hands-on stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And we just liked it so much that we just did it for the rest of the quarter.
That's great. The Wingding, that's called?
Yes.
Yeah, I find what you're talking about very, very compelling.
Yeah.
The thing about you were trying to find, really talk about, is this a design project? Is this an engineering project? And talk about what your strategies are.
Yeah.
Based on that and how you combine them. Because it was really both, right?
It was both. Yeah, but that's what I felt. I mean, when I went to Myanmar and realized the human power things, you know, I felt that we should have done this in Stanford. You know?
Mm-hmm.
It's not something which is so difficult to understand.
Mm-hmm.
But we just did not. Maybe because we didn't go into designing a treadle, that we did not
go
into this human considerations.
Mm-hmm.
But even in terms of designing the mechanism, this is a huge factor about how much power can you put in and how do you design a mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
So from an engineering point of view, it would have been great if we had done this much earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Really try to understand what are the engineering limitations or what are the inputs and outputs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then to design within that?
Yes. And then did prototyping and design within that. What happened was, as I look back, it seemed as if the whole Stanford experience was just a big understanding phase for us.
Mm-hmm.
What we did in that quarter was just to understand the whole dynamics of water and lifting water, and that's it. The actual design was started in Myanmar.
Right.
Do you think you would have had time to do more than that?
I wish we had. I don't know.
Yeah,
it's tricky. Yes.
Yeah.
It seems tricky. It depends upon, you know. If we had people who had more of an engineering bent, maybe we would have done that. But we were all too keen on prototyping.
Yeah.
At that point of time.
That's what the culture of the class is, though.
Yes, that's what the culture of design is, yeah.
It's interesting how you're looking at saying, let's define our engineering problems, and then it seems that's what your approach is again and again.
Yeah.
What's the engineering problem?
Yes.
Let's step back and approach that as designers.
Yeah. What I'm saying is, yeah.
As
you
opposed
do both
to what's the design problem, let's approach it as an engineer. It's
no,
really going,
yes.
What's the engineering problem?
Yes.
How does design?
Yeah. What I was trying to do, I mean, what we would have liked to do is to go back and forth between the two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so we started as engineering, went to design, got stuck there for a whole quarter. Only when we went back to Myanmar did we go back to engineering and then to design engineering. You know.
Okay.
Use the methods alternately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's very unique. I mean, to have that in one person, right? Is to have someone who's a competent engineer and a competent designer.
It is, yes.
Who's conscious of what the different methodologies are, and how to apply them, and when.
Yeah.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, it's actually, I think the whole, just getting another take, now that we're familiar with the project and getting your take on it is really interesting too. I think it's just, it's really rich. Yeah. So do you want to keep going? I have to run.
No, I'm going to stop. I want to take some pictures, but I want to, we'll go over this material, we'll talk about it, and we'll get back to you. We'll get our tweak up questions, maybe more specific questions, but this is, to me, this is it on or off?
Yeah, it's on. Sure.